Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast, is brought to you today in part by Audible, offering anytime, anywhere listening of your favorite audiobooks with the biggest selection ever, and it's all backed by Amazon. Listeners of the All the Wonders podcast might enjoy Solo by Newbery-winning author Kwame Alexander. Failure, family struggles, and making a name for yourself while avoiding the name your washed-up, rock star, addiction-torn father has earned by reputation is hard. This book is free verse. It sings off the page. And the audiobook is read by Kwame himself, with Randy Preston, a singer, guitarist, and Kwame's sidekick on Bookish, his new web series. Visit the show notes for this episode at allthewonders.com and start your free trial with Audible and support this podcast with the same click of a mouse or tap of a screen. I hope you'll go try it out and see for yourself. Happy listening. Meet Catherine Roy, always questioning how to guide the reader's attention. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 411 of the podcast with Catherine Roy. How to Be an Elephant has been making its rounds in libraries and on end-of-the-year lists, and one only needs to pick up the book to understand why. Catherine's strength in visual storytelling, leading the reader through inquiry and curiosity, and her focus on treating her audience like scientists are undeniable qualities in this new nonfiction picture book, and her watercolor work is just stunning. Enjoy the listen, then go to your local bookstore and check out How to Be an Elephant. Here's episode number 411 of the podcast with Catherine Roy. Welcome back to the podcast, Catherine Roy. I'm so excited that we're talking.
Yay! I'm so excited to be here. Thank you, Matthew.
Okay, so first off, I apologize for my voice. We're back from Thanksgiving break. I've been teaching all week. I have a lot of classes in the beginning of the week. I have used my voice. I've been excited to see children, and I've been reading aloud the entire time. But then,
you sound great, and I've got a cold, or I'm getting over a cold, so we can both just sort of horse together. It's perfect.
We'll have those markers in history on this recording of, oh, my voice sounded a little funny. It must have been. But to also know beyond that, that you and I have sort of been playing tag with each other back and forth, trying to find the perfect time to do this. And I feel so much electricity running through me that this is the exact perfect time to be talking to you. We were going to talk. You ended up being on picture booking. I love when you're on with Nick. I think you and I maybe first talked and then you went to talk to Nick when we were talking about Neighborhood Sharks, right?
Yeah, a couple years ago.
So to have it swing the other way of, I was so excited to talk to you, then I was like, oh, Nick talked to her. I need to wait. We need to give it some space so that we can have room to breathe. And in the time of giving space, stuff happened. Another book came in the mail and stuff we're going to talk about that I see your face on my Hulu, things like that. We're gonna get there. But
Okay.
first and most importantly, first, Catherine, I'm gonna have you introduce yourself to the people listening that maybe don't know you yet, and
Okay.
then I'm gonna jump in to the book that we were planning on talking about all along. So first, would you mind introducing yourself, please?
Absolutely. Well, my name is Catherine Roy. I'm an author and an illustrator of children's books, mostly nonfiction picture books. And I love my job. I've been doing it for a few years now and love mostly exploring topics that have to do with science and the natural world and often exploration. So that's what I'm working on now, and that's what my latest book is about.
Yeah, and to throw it back, your debut, when you and I first talked, it was for a book called Neighborhood Sharks, and you got the Siebert honor. Congratulations for that. That's
Thank
an
you.
amazing thing. And you return now with How to Be an Elephant, a book that I knew you were working on when we last talked. But the thing that I don't know that I got to really say to you or articulate to you last time we talked, but I want to say now, is that in reading your nonfiction, it is so evident the amount of research you do and the love of research that you do. I know you talked about how exciting it was, going out into the boat with the scientist for sharks. I remember that part of our conversation. But in reading Elephant, there's so much that I just feel like you're just giddy to tell us. And as a reader, I'm just reading up and reading up and reading up. And so, for that, for the way that you have found how to format a nonfiction picture book to be this inviting and communicative of the subject matter, bravo for that. You really did a beautiful job with Elephant.
Thank you. It's a little overwhelming how well received it's being right now. I was about a year late in turning it in because I gave birth to my son in the middle of the project, and it was, as you know, as a parent, very difficult to get things done with a small infant around. I really underestimated that. But I did get it in. I got it done and I turned it in and I felt like I crawled across the finish line, and I just didn't know, having spent so long on it, how it was going to go over, if it was good at all. You know, when you've spent so much time with a project, you just don't have any distance, any
Yes.
space between you and it. And it was just everything that had gone into it was apparent to me, and everything that had to be taken out, I saw as well. And so that it's being so well received, and that kids are tweeting about it, and librarians are excited, and it's amazing. And you're right, I did pour myself into this book. Personally and professionally, and I'm really glad that it's finding a home in the hearts of readers. So
It
it's been
is.
great.
I'm so glad to hear that there's kids tweeting you. That's something I love to do. I love, love, love. And I will bring up, and I know that this gets to be that place where like we don't want to talk about it because it can get in people's heads so much and it's out of love, but I want to talk about like Muck Caldecott lists and lists, just lists. This is the time of year when books are being put on lists. And so maybe I want to say, leading into this, that I know that that is something that can really get in people's heads to be on a list or to not be on a list. I know that, and I don't want to touch that. I do want to go to that place, though, of being talked about by children after being studied by children. I know that there are a number of people that are including How to Be an Elephant in their Muck Caldecott work with children. And when I do that with my students, it often takes the shape of we're going to read all these books, we're going to narrow down what we like, and then when we select the winner, we're going to spend the week communicating to our winner and our honor books over Twitter, over letters, over emails, over drawings. We want to give back in words and in love and expression what we feel like you've given to us. So it means a lot to me as a librarian who works hard to amplify student voice to hear that those voices of students are reaching you. That's really, really good. I'm glad that that is a thing that you're holding close.
Yes, I mean that's the point, right? You spend so much time with a project, and you've got the few researchers in your life. You've got your editor, you've got your agent, you've got your spouse or your partner, but that's it. It's this tiny little community, and then you turn it in and you let it go, and a year and a half later, suddenly a lot of people have it. And the point is that experience, is that transaction, for the kid to finally
It
hold
is.
it and read it. And so it's great to just see it like come home again, I guess, which is where it
Yeah.
belongs.
That's a beautiful,
So.
beautiful end game that you have in mind there. I want to jump in and talk about How to Be an Elephant. And
Yeah.
normally this is the place where I'd be like, can you tell us a little bit about the book? But really, your title is the book. The story is How to Be an Elephant. And it literally is like, no, really, let's talk about how to be an elephant and what that means. Even if I read through some of the headings, we can talk about how the elephant uses its nasal folds to detect all of these different scents, this like aroma of scents, and how they're built from birth. Their bones are built to carry their enormous weight because the threat of predators is so strong from the beginning. All of these things that you lead us through are just so beautifully done. But what I want to call out first and foremost, because you nail format on this book, Catherine. Like you, I, this is this. Well, here we go. Now, here we go into the, I can feel it. It's
For
coming.
myself to take it right now. Why?
I
Well, let's pray, Matthew.
know. Okay, but focus. But seriously. So I can share this with you. One of the things that I admire about the way you do books, and I have three in front of me to see this, but specifically with How to Be an Elephant, is that you use every inch of the book to tell your story. And in How to Be an Elephant, you are really driving that home. I don't have a hardcover copy. I have a folded and gathered copy. I have a galley. So I don't know how the book folds together, but I can see though that from the end papers into the title page, into that first spread where text is introduced, all of that is leading to the birth of the elephant, and to know that that's where we're starting, that we're starting there, we're starting with the herd, and then to be inside the mother at your title page, to know that is, I mean, I can't think of a more intimate way to start a book. I mean, it's just, I know that in this process you also became a mother. That was a thing that happened. But maybe in the infinite geeking out I'm going to do in the next 30 minutes with you, can I ask, was that title page always that title page?
No, this title page has been so many things. And this elephant, bless her, floating around inside her mother's womb, has been in multiple spots in the book. For a while, instead of that last thread, so I should say to readers that the book opens with a birth, and it sort of closes with another calf being born to that baby elephant who's grown up throughout the book. So the fetal baby that was about to be born was at the end of the book for a while as that last spread. It was at the beginning. It was a couple spreads in where it was about to be born, like a little bit past the title where the mother's about to go into labor. But ultimately, all of that had to just get reworked and reworked and storyboarded basically over and over again. I would plague my editor and my husband and my agent with six drafts of a PDF, like six versions. Like, here's A, B, C, D, E, and F. Like, which one is going the best? And they'd be like, Catherine, it doesn't matter. I'm like, no, it does matter. It does matter. I have to tell this right. And finally, this seemed just like the one after sleeping on it, night after night after night, and looking at all the different ways to do this, how to condense this down and get to that moment where she's born and get going, because there's just so much information in this book. But I needed to contextualize the birth. And so therefore you need to have the herd from the outside and the baby from the inside, and then you've got to show the herd from the outside again, and show that social behavior, that amazing moment, that midwifing that they do basically to gather around the mother and protect her, and they trumpet and they urinate. They're so excited, and so expressive, and they're waiting to help and to meet the baby. I mean, we don't entirely know what's going on in their mind, right? And how much they completely understand or are like what they're thinking, but it certainly seems from the outside that they are getting ready to welcome this baby and protecting this mom and protecting this infant. So I wanted to show that from the very beginning and just infuse the art with the social behavior and the family connection that elephants share with humans. And, you know, what better place than to start at the very beginning? And honestly, I'm still sort of in shock that I have not gotten trouble for having an elephant being born in my book. Like, nobody said anything. You know, I'm like, wow, what can I get away with now? I mean, just I thought for sure when I was turning in these sketches that somebody would say, you can't put that in a children's book. Like, you just can't. You can't have a baby dropping out of its mother with blood and an umbilical cord showing. Like, we're not going to publish it. Like, rated R. Nope. You know, nobody's said anything, Matthew. It's kind of crazy. And in fact, I've had these really fun conversations with kids that are like, what's that white stuff around her? And I get to, you know, talk about a little bit of reproductive biology, that there's an amniotic sac and that we have one too. And, you know, trying not to get them too distracted by it, but just this opportunity to explain this really natural mammalian process that's part of life and birth and that we share with elephants. So it's just, I don't know where I'm going with this, but I'm excited.
I love
that
it. But he was, I love that you're wait, can we just stop and say, can we stop and address that you just admitted to being excited about talking about reproduction in elementary school visits? All of the fifth grade teams are like praising you for handling their family life units. Thank you.
Oh, no, I love it. It's so no, fun. Yeah. I think this is the way in, is to go through this kind of scenario. You can talk about this stuff without getting into fifth grade health class. I'm not going to say what I was going to say, but, you know, just we don't need to talk about human body parts to explain a lot of things. We can talk about elephants
and part
process
of
steps and get them excited.
Yeah.
And that's, you know.
Well, two things here. One, you are incredibly well-tempered in your text to never personify the animals. And I noticed that in sharks as well, that I know that we need to not personify. I know that we as humans want to personify because that's how we understand other people. We want to give people and animals our feelings because that makes it easier to understand. We do it to our dogs and cats all the time. But to even the way you just said about the females in the herd gathering together and celebrating as that way the birth of the calf, to make sure the text doesn't jump to any sort of assumption but remains scientifically true and accurate so that it can be held up as a tool for research for students is so important. And the other thing I wanted to say is just that, well, I think I really was stuck on the title page, the colors too. You have a really nice break in colors because we have these purples and pinks and grays of the elephant and how close we are to the elephant, all in this sort of unnatural shape to the rest of the book. The rest of the book, the elephant is walking. She's walking nearly the entire time, which is a testament to what elephants do.
Mm-hmm.
But to have her just in this loose floating ball, just relaxed and I think most importantly safe, mm-hmm. allows for how fast we have to get her up on her feet over the next three spreads. It allows for a really beautiful transition there. And speaking of transition, I think one of the other things I want to call out about this book specifically is the way that you transition to pages that have more text on them. You allow sort of this waxing and waning of having the storytelling being driven by illustration into the storytelling being supported by illustration, being used as like a way to illustrate the processes that you're trying to explain, how the nose works, how this works, how the bones work. And then you bring it back to the illustrations telling the story themselves. Just that arc that you have there, in the way you're communicating through illustration, I think is really powerful. And I think it's done really well, but I can see that there are beats there that when you brought up about the six PDF versions you would send at a time, I can see that there are conscious decisions on these pages to make sure you're using every inch of the book the way you need to communicate your story.
Yeah, composition is so important to me.
Yes.
It's most of what I think about. Just how did the page turns fall? Where does the gutter go? Are we reading this on the left side? Are we leading this on the right side? Is it on the top? Is it on the bottom? How do I control, not control, maybe it's not the right word, but closely guide the reader's attention through a spread and bring them to the feelings that I have when I think about this and when I learn about this as best as possible. And I can do that with color, and I can do that with composition, and I can do that with timing my page turns. The text, as you said, is supposed to be a little more removed and more scientific, but the art is where that expression and like my personal feelings about something can shine through. And so I don't want to be one of my teachers would call it an after-school special. You never want to be too heavy-handed with your lesson or your message. You know, you can be a little more heavy-handed in endnotes or author's notes, I think, but I always want there to be some space for the person to experience it themselves. And if they don't connect to it, then that's fine. You know, it's not the book for them. But if they do, I want to bring them on the journey that I feel when I learn about and work on a book like this. Thank you.
The time that you're spending on it to be that interested, to be able to communicate all of those exciting things that you want to share, I know is a hard thing to spend that much time. And that's probably, I would assume, and you could tell me more, that's probably how you decide what will be the subject matters of the next books, is just how willing you are to live with the subject matter, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I have to want to go there. I have to find a team of people that I can trust, or a couple of people that I trust.
Yeah.
And the information has to be compelling enough to be a good story. You know, and there's lots of information that's really fun and interesting to learn about. But if I can't find the way in, and I will get people that I meet and occasionally emails from people that I haven't met saying, oh my gosh, I really like your books, or I like what you're about. Like, I know a lot about this kind of tiny sparrow that lives in this mountain range. I would love to have you come out and do a book about that. And they'll describe the information. And I think what they're finding is really, really interesting. But if I can't find that story, that entry point, then it's not that it's not worth doing. It sounds like a really exciting species and exciting environment, but I'm not the person to do that book, you know? So yeah, I really do have to think about my entry point and also the time commitment and be choosy about the projects. And also just for some balance, a couple of people have asked me to do a giraffe book, and I think giraffe books are awesome, but I just did an African mammal. And so I want to change places, or at least, you know, type of animal. I want to do it because you could do lots of African mammals. There's lots of really cool African mammals, you know, they're all worth having books about. And I think everybody should go out and do those books, but I want a change of scenery, you know, like maybe something colder, or maybe something under the ocean again, or just a totally different biome, to keep me engaged. Yeah.
I can understand why. And I can see how compelled you are for, in this case, about elephants, in the way that you lay the text out in the beginning. If you don't mind, I'm going to read your opening text, because of just how you can see how much you, the author, cares for your subject matter in the way that you express how difficult life is going to be. But let's go, reader, on this journey and see what a miracle it is that this one animal exists and survives. And so you say, with flapping ears and whiffling trunks, the herd quickly relays the news. After 22 months of growing, a new baby is on her way. From walking and rumbling to drinking and dining, nothing will come easy for this giant to be. But like her mother before her, she'll have to learn how to be an elephant. That notion of, for me, that notion of those two lines together, nothing will come easy, but she has to learn.
Yeah.
So it lays out what you go into immediately with predators, that if you don't learn this, it is life or death. There are no other options here. You can't you can't do this halfway. You have to learn how to survive, or else you don't.
Right. It's a dangerous place to grow up. And even without the predators, there's so many things that can go wrong. I mean, the infant elephants that are orphaned due to poaching that were originally taken in by Daphne Sheldrick of the Sheldrick Elephant Orphanage, they would die because their parasite load was too high. And she didn't know how to, you know, help them with the right kind of formula for milk and the right kind of attention around the clock so that they could, their immune system could withstand that withdrawal from their herd. They just need so much constant ongoing support, just like an infant human, you know, just like a newborn baby needs to be held all the time. So
and you can see what happens when they're not.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, and elephants have post-traumatic stress disorders from poaching, and you know, the most dangerous thing to the social life of elephant herds is that loss of wisdom at the top. Elephants grow their whole lives, and so therefore their tusks get bigger and bigger. The largest tusks belonging to the oldest members of the herd, and the oldest members of the herd have all the wisdom of migration routes, and they have some of the best genes because they've survived the longest. And so when you remove a large bull elephant from a genetic pool or a matriarch from a social pool, it's a drain on the entire group, both a loss of culture and a loss of good genes. So that structure, that family structure, is critical from the beginning to the end, basically, for the next generation of young. So there's just so much in common. And the most compelling thing for me has always been the connection of humans to elephants and the family structure and the learning environment that they have. And becoming a parent and getting to see how my son learns and what I show him, but mostly what he copies, you know, there's so many things that we haven't taught him that he's just learned from watching us. And that's, as far as we know, mostly how elephants learn is the social learning, the copying. There's just so much in common, you know. And you have two kids, right, Matthew?
I do. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Yeah. How old are they?
They're now 7 and 2.5.
2.5. Yeah. So 2.5. So that's basically the same age as my son. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we've had conversations about that before.
Yeah.
Are they not betrothed?
That would be lovely. Let's arrange that right now. I'll tell him when he's.
Yeah. You let him know. Let him know that.
Yeah, right.
Let him know that my girl's around. She's available. She loves to FaceTime. That's the truth. So I'm looking at this book. And just to be honest to you and to the people listening, I don't really know where to go with it because there's so much to talk about that I feel like also is for me so personal. This is like when I go to the zoo, I don't like to talk to people. I just like to take it in, right? And build experiences. And for me, when I read this book, it feels a lot like I'm learning and it's sort of a private, wonderful thing. There are more of those moments where I want to point and say, look at this. Did you see this happen? Do you know this thing? Like when you talk about sound traveling and how amazingly far distances they can hear one another. They can find one another. It's amazing. Crazy to see all of these looks into their body, to know that they are built for survival on a scale that we as human beings just can't comprehend. Just we don't have the lungs. We don't have the olfactory setup that they have. There are just things that we don't have. you talk about the nose being one of the most extraordinary tools in the animal kingdom.
Yeah, one of the most extraordinary appendages. It, you know, because you're writing and it's for science, you don't say the most, but
no.
I'd like it to say the most because I really don't think that there is something else that does as many functions as an elephant's trunk, and that it has all these functions, that it's an arm and a shower head and a nose and a tool in so many different ways is incredible, and that it's attached to their face. How many tools do we have to have to do any one of those things?
Right. And there's these, I think it's like 100,000 muscles that just allow it to move all these different ways. To think of your hand in a way, you almost think about how limited your movement is with your hand, even though your hand is quite versatile in what you can do with your hand and your hands together.
Yeah.
When you compare that this one tool, this 6 foot long, 300 pound tool, mind you, is just built to do these things. It's just, there's just wonder in every single page here. And I guess where I want to go, I want to talk about your art, because there's something that you do that I don't know other people doing, which is so beautiful. But where I want to take us is when you take us back out onto the savannah, where we lose almost all of the text again, and it just says, this is like the spread I want everyone just to go find. Maybe I can include it in the show notes or something.
But yeah, please.
Your line that says, out on the savannah, the elephants rumble, forever on the move in search of food, water, and safety. That picture, that sky, were you here? Is this a memory? This illustration is, it's so beautiful, Catherine. Like, I can't even, it's, you have like, to describe it for people who haven't seen it yet, it's almost as if we, the readers, the viewers, are looking at a camera that's a bit out of focus because the animals are so far away. They're a bit hazy, and yet they're present. We know what they are. We know those shapes. They're giants among this vast and flat landscape. And then these gorgeous purple and pink clouds are just blanketing the sky. There's no other way to put it. It's just such a beautiful illustration.
Thank you so much. I worked a lot. I did several versions of studies for this, and then finally got to something that I liked. And have you been to Africa before?
No, but this looks to me like going to Africa and trying with all your might to capture what your eyes saw.
Yes, that's exactly right. The sky there, I don't, you know, it's not like the sky is actually different, but it's possible that there's something about the weather that makes the clouds form differently, because so many times daily, you know, you look up and the clouds, maybe they're the same size and consistent, and so you can see them receding into the distance. And because they're the same size and they're receding into the distance, you can see how vast the horizon is. I feel like our clouds here are somehow bunchier, and they're all different sizes, and so you don't get that same sense of depth and space. But there's something about the way clouds exist in Africa, perhaps. This is totally unscientific, and I haven't researched this at all, but somehow the sky feels vast, and you feel so small underneath it. And I wanted to try to express that and to emotionally show the distance that their lives cover and sort of the bigness of them, and at the same time, the much larger picture that they're a part of.
That is exactly what I was feeling. We spend the entire book right up close with them, and then you give us a moment to just show these animals are giant, but the land they're inhabiting is even bigger.
Yeah.
And they just fit. They exist much like we are, these infinitesimally small creatures on this planet. They likewise are giants on the earth, but they are small for the earth holding them. It's so beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm thanks.
So here's what I wanted to lead into, that I am just captivated by, with sharks as well, and in here and in the third book we'll talk about in a minute, but I feel like in Elephant, you really show us your brush strokes, and you are weaving a complex blend of tones and colors together to show the hues of these different animals. And it's just, it's beautiful, Catherine. Like, it's, I don't know of other, I certainly don't know of any other picture book artists that are working in your medium that are creating art the way you are. But to look at it, it's to me one of those things that shows me, oh, when I paint something, here's a different way to think about it. Not what color is it, but it's all the colors. So how can we layer the colors together to accomplish what you're accomplishing? I know that you have consideration of light and of shadow and of different gradients. I know all of that, but just the thing you're doing with color and to carry, I'm particularly looking at the spread with the elephants at the watering hole, and we're talking about the trunks, and to notice that those colors of those elephants are the same colors of those clouds I was just admiring. come on.
I think I did this one also a couple of times too. At first all the darks were far too black and it was getting really muddy and dark looking, and I backed up and I said, okay, I need to emphasize the baby. Her shadows need to feel warm and bright, so that's purple. Specifically, I don't know how to pronounce it. I think it's quinodichrome. Mm-hmm. There's a certain color of paint that I love, and I use it a lot. And the mom, her leg, should also be in that same color, because here's, again, the compositional thing. Everything about the mom needs to be sort of pointing at the baby. Yes. So the baby's overlapping the mom's four legs. And then on either side of the mom, it would be helpful to knock them into the background a little bit to have those elephants be more blue. And then on either side of those to have purple again, to sort of keep the foreground and the background separated. And just sort of pushing and pulling with the color to try to create a space with 10 elephants, which is the number that I decided the herd would have. So, you know, how to show 10 creatures over and over again was really tricky. I was kicking myself pretty quickly into making the final art for this. Like, okay, Catherine, you know, I went through and counted. Neighborhood Sharks had about 20 to 25 drawings of a shark, which is blue and it's shaped like a torpedo. Good job. Why did you have to pick for your second book a social creature covered in wrinkles from birth that lives in a herd with 10 creatures? Why did you do this to yourself? Because now, Catherine, you have to draw like 150 elephants.
Yes, like, right?
That behave. They're not just, it's not just 150 torpedoes that are blue. It's 150 elephants. Like, what were you thinking? What were you thinking?
Love it. I'm so glad that you torture yourself the way you do. It's such a treat.
I was like, next time I'm doing a book about worms. That's
all
it.
Of the different ways you pose, you position, you choreograph these elephants. Even, might I point out, you say, how did you get away with showing a birth and the afterbirth? But you also, my friend, get away with showing an elephant swiping poop and the baby eating it. Come on. That's what my two, we were talking about our babies. That's what my 2.5-year-old noticed. She noticed that right away. She thinks that was amazing. And actually, it came right around the same time that my son had, so he's obsessed with reading animal books, which is exactly where I want him to be. And he was pointing out about different animals that eat their parents' poop for the enzymes that are in it, to be able to build up those enzymes, how very common it is in the world. And here you provided us with a picture with great contrast. That poop stands out right away.
Yellow and purple, opposite sides of the color chart. Got to be a purple elephant. No, I mean, speaking of color, though, elephants, you know, they're gray. So whatever is going on in the environment, whatever conditions, the weather for this poop page, it's rainy. So you've got lots of, you know, nice grays and purples. You know, if they're playing in red dirt, they turn red. If they're wet, the wet part is a different color than the dry part. So you can really play with the color with them, even though they're gray animals, you know, biologically speaking, because they never actually look gray. So that was really a fun freedom to have with color here. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to let this book go because there's so much more that I savor about it that I know I can continue to talk about with readers and with you and just sharing. But before we move on to the next book, let me just ask, is there anything I didn't ask you about making this book, about the process that you wanted to express that I don't want to move on from the conversation without you having a chance to share?
Well, I feel like we covered a lot of what I was thinking about. The only other thing that I can think of is that I tried to make the mom and the matriarch sort of consistently noticeable from their ear markings. Elephants can be identified as individuals by the shape of their tusks and their condition of their ears. And so the mom, hopefully you can follow throughout the book. And then as the baby grows up, she's got that hole in her ear that stays. So I don't know that that's something that people notice or think about when they read it, but it was fun for me to kind of keep track of at least those three individuals throughout making the art and trying to keep that consistent.
Yeah, it's the mom with the M in her ear.
Yeah, and then the matriarch kind of has an M-shaped notch too. Yeah. So yeah.
Oh, that page, here we go again. That page where you talk about ears and you can show sort of the light going through the ear, it turns like that bright pink color. Man, I love that. Good stuff.
Thanks.
I love it. who am I kidding? I love it all. So while I was waiting to talk to you, while our time was shifting around on the calendar, just out of the blue, another publisher sends me a book and it has your name on it. And I was like, wait a second. So Little Brown sent me, Otis and Will Discover the Deep, the Record-Setting Dive of the Bathysphere. Barb Rosenstock wrote this book. Your name is on this book. This book is something amazing, and it's got sharks.
I know. I was like, yay,
the
water.
More torpedoes.
Exploration. Sign me up. I will do it. Yes. This is great. Yeah, I was so excited to have this come across my desk, and it was such a treat to be able to just respond to someone else's text and structure, and Barb did such a wonderful job with this manuscript, and immediately I was, you know, seeing it as I was reading it, which is a really exciting thing to happen. And the research was so fun, and I got to draw people, which I haven't gotten to do in quite a while. There's a couple of human beings in both sharks and elephants. Yeah. But the last time that I really drew a lot of people was during graduate school when I attended the Center for Cartoon Studies for my MFA in cartooning, baby. So it's just so fun to figure out how they needed to sit in this tiny craft that gets lowered off the edge of a ship, and they get to look out into the deep sea for the first time, and human beings got to see, you know, living sea life underwater.
Oh, and that double gatefold in the middle. Oh, man.
That was the other thing. They're like, there's going to be a gatefold. I was like,
oh, you know that going into it. Oh, that's cool.
Oh, yeah, no. And at one point, they're like, we don't know if it's going to stay. I was like, no. Let's figure out how do we make that happen? Because I have been dying for a gatefold.
Well, this book has a little while to go before it publishes, right?
Early June 2018. So, yeah.
Okay. So we've got some time. We can come back and talk about this later. But the story. Barb does a number of things in her text here that I really thought were just so strong. And this, for people that don't know the name, as soon as I got to the back of the book, I was like, oh, this is the Noisy Paintbox author. Yes. I know she's done many other things, but the Noisy Paintbox, gosh, that's my book. I like that book. So in the story, one of the, I feel like the most powerful thing she does. So if we're picturing this bathysphere, for people that don't have that, I had the mental image come right away to my mind, but I think it's because this is where I was interested in growing up, right? But to have this metal ball on a line going down deeper and deeper into the water, to have your illustrations open up as it goes down into the deep. I'm going to read some of the text, splashing into the water, and then we get to 200 feet, stop, description, 300 feet, stop, description, until we go further and further where we're just making feet marks stop is just I got chills. I can't wait to read this to children because I feel like there's an immense amount of tension that she leaves there, and her words literally become a line, like the line that Otis and Will are taking down to the depths of the ocean. There's so many things working here that I was like, oh my word, the design in this book is insane. But you, with the swirls, with the colors, with however it is you do that thing, or your eye knows to do that thing where I'm going to put some light colors here and some patches here and some of this and some of that, like with the elephants where you just know, like with the sharks where you just know. There's something about your eye, Catherine, that is so strong, that relationship you have with color and with blocking that color and with the shape of that color, that I'm just in awe of your skill in that. There's no one else in picture books that is executing books and illustration that way. It sets you apart, and more importantly, the fact that then in this case, Little Brown knew that your art was what belonged on this book, and that moving forward, I know that you're having other books and being offered other projects because your art is distinct. It has a voice. You as an artist have a voice, and I guess where I'm trying to get to is, I get it now where you rely on a publisher when you're an author to find the right illustrator. I get it. I understand because you have such a singular, powerful voice as an artist. I get it. And that is why I want to tell you that I'm writing a book about whatever nonfiction thing that'll be compelling to you, and it'll have poop, and it'll have water and torpedo sh shaped animals, and
Warp.
wrinkles, and clouds, and
Right? I know. That'd be, oh man. I want to see that book, Matthew. You should do it. All the things.
torpedo cloud poop, a
Thank
scientific
you.
phenomenon.
I just want to poke all the buttons. Let's just push all
All of them. How can I write a manuscript that is
the
doctored to be like, I don't know, publisher, who do you think should illustrate it?
Oh, you're so
No,
funny.
no. But
You're
really, to just say that, it was it's neat to witness that. I've seen in two books, how you make art and the way you approach your subject matter. And so to see this subject matter was just like, yep, I get it. I get that this is that she's the right choice for this. It's
Cool.
cool. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I mean, what that means is that I'm also kind of finding my voice. It's not like
Oh, yeah.
it's not, I think people think, I've had a lot of questions like this, especially from high school students. You know, how do you figure out how you draw? And I always tell them that I spent so much time trying to be everybody else, and finally you kind of get backed into a corner and you're like, I don't know how to do this any other way but
Yeah.
this backwards process of planning it the way that I plan it and doing it the way I do it. It's the only, you know, like weird magic trick that I know. I've got one, and this is how I'm gonna do it. And if they don't like it, then I've got nothing else, you know. And you just have to jump. And it's like your handwriting. And so I feel like I'm kind of finding that balance and trying to loosen up a little bit and let the watercolor do more of the talking instead of being so tight. Like, I'm trusting myself a little more, so I'm really excited about the next couple of books that I'm doing and thinking more about how I'm going to let the paint be more expressive. And I'm getting the hang of the thing that I think that I'm good at, you know, because I'm still learning.
Of
Like, I
course.
think Otis and Will is only me. What is this? So you've got all three of my books in front of you. I don't think I've done any other full color books, so I'm still at the beginning of this whole thing, you know. So it's exciting. It's exciting to start to see. It's really hard to see how it is that you are, you know. Like, it's really obvious to see how your spouse is, or how your parents are, or how
Right.
your kids are, but it's really hard to see the way that you are. And I
Yeah.
think I'm starting to finally kind of figure out like where I like to play and how I can push myself more,
I
you
will
know.
look forward, as I've already had the opportunity to do over so many years with different illustrators, I'll look forward to how you pushing yourself will cause you to grow and change, and what your art will look like in 5, 10, 15 years, because you'll evolve and try new things and find new things that you like, and just the way that you'll go, it'll just be exciting to see. So
You,
I know for a fact that not only do you work in traditional medium, but you also work on the computer because Hulu. Okay, so Catherine.
Yeah, we can talk about that.
Catherine, here's this thing. Before we go, we need to talk about that. Yeah, because one of the other things that was holding up our date was, if we can just hold off till after this date, I'm going to be able to talk about this commercial that they were shooting. And I was like, wait, what? And then the commercial date came, and then you shared it on Twitter. And then, as I was saying, as I do, my wife and I were watching, we were watching season 2 of Fargo on Hulu. And suddenly, during one of the episodes, you were the commercial during every one of the 4 breaks. And I was like, this is the most amazing and unreal thing that Catherine Roy is in a commercial. So you're in this Windows commercial. Drawing sharks. Yeah, girl. Drawing sharks.
Mm-hmm, of course. I made an elephant and a baby elephant, too. And there was this long debate, which I can only imagine how many people were involved in it, before they finally, by committee, seems to voted for sharks instead of elephants, because it was, you know, one or the other, basically. And I'm glad they went with sharks. I think sharks, for their for what they're trying to do with their commercial and their product and their campaign, is a better fit. But
how does one become involved? Let's start there.
Yeah. So a friend of mine, Bethany Barton, who's also an author and illustrator, she did I'm Trying to Love Spiders and Give Bees a Chance. Yeah. We share the same agent.
I'm Trying to Love Spiders. Can I just point out? I'm Trying to Love Spiders just won our picture book award for our state.
Oh, that's awesome.
Our state book award. Oh, yeah. I love that book.
Oh, I love her books. I love her sense of humor. And she's just the most wonderful person. But her main job, I mean, she does books too, but her main job during the day is being a production person in Hollywood and set in stage dressing. Oh. And so she just knows all these people in Hollywood. And we share the same agent, which is how we met, Stephen Barr. But she... I got a Facebook message from somebody that said that they were friends with her and that he worked with a casting agency, and would I be interested in interviewing for this spot that involved a 2D artist who's interested in 3D. And I texted her to say, is this really a guy that you know? And she said, yeah, he's not going to murder you. And I said, okay.
That's where my brain went.
I got on the phone with him, and he said, okay, well, you know, we'll do this Skype call with somebody from our group. And I said, sure. You know, and I spent a little time like setting up the computer in a good spot for the light and wearing something that would, you know, like I think I wear a black shirt so it looked good on camera, and got all my books in front of me. And I chatted with this guy for, I don't know, 15 or 20 minutes. And then at the end, he's like, all right, just forget this ever happened, because we're going to do a lot of these. And I said, okay, no problem. That was fun. Interesting. I never thought it would go anywhere, you know, like, but why not? And then I don't know, a few weeks later, they ran a background check, and I thought, okay, I guess I made it to round one. And then they wanted to do another call, this time with a different group of people. And I said, sure. And we got the Skype call set up, and there was some tech issues, and I was nervous because I thought that maybe I wouldn't make it to the next round if we couldn't get the call through. And then it turned out that the people I was talking to were from the ad company, and that they were going with my story. And they start telling me that. And the whole time in my head, I'm just like, wait, what? This is round two. Like, you've already picked me, you know, it was just sort of,
and we're done.
And then I went up to Seattle and met the team from Microsoft and learned more about the software that they were going to be featuring in this particular spot. They've done a number of these. It's part of a much larger campaign. And if anybody's seen the teacher, Tony Jackson, the fourth grade rap teacher, that was this summer. And then there's another one, Angela Luna, who's a fashion designer making fashion that you can wear as a tent. And she's a humanitarian raising money for different causes. She does amazing work. So it was really cool to just be picked as someone that they think fits their image and who they think is up to cool things. And they feel proud to, you know, have represent their company. So
that is
cool. So I learned the software, and they wanted me to make, you know, stuff that was related to my book. So I made a whole bunch of different things for related to neighborhood sharks. And then they asked me I got an email from the production guy, can you make a Pinterest page of your ideal studio space? And so I spent a few minutes on Pinterest throwing together and sent that to him. And then a few days later, he sent me back a 3D model of this mock-up of basically exactly what's in the commercial. which was gorgeous. And when I
Right, because
got there, they had built.
you mentioned the other day on Facebook about, or somewhere, about like, I was really grateful for this person who did hair and this person that did set and this person. And I remember seeing in that image you shared how cool the background looked, how cool that set looked. Did you go somewhere for it?
So the shooting happens in LA,
Okay.
on stage. The only one that was available was this giant sound studio, and that they shoot movies in, you know. So and they built this tiny little set relative to the sound stage. It's like an this massive, massive, massive room that's stories and stories tall, and there's this like little set in the middle that's got giant lights the size of cars all around it to make it look like daylight. I mean, it's just really surreal.
Really? Oh,
Yeah,
cool.
it was a whole thing, you know. Just so intensely interesting to be in this totally different creative environment where so many people are involved.
Did you
And
shoot for like how long does it take to make whatever this is, like a 15 or 30 second commercial? How much shooting do you do to do what came out?
a lot.
I figure.
I actually don't know that I'm allowed to exactly say how long I was on set.
Oh,
The
that's okay.
non-disclosure agreement is pretty severe, but there's
But
a
a lot
lot of
is
time,
fine. Yeah,
a
okay.
lot of time, a lot of hours. Yeah, and it was surprising, you know, just because they everything has to get set up and they need me to change, and then like the kids that came on set,
Right.
the extras, they had to get them dressed and in line, and that was really interesting seeing the whole process because they didn't really know what was going on. Their mom had just brought them to a thing that day, you know. So, this one girl in the front, I was saying that pink looked really good on her, and she's like, "I don't like pink." And I'm like, "Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh.
Like, it looks really good on you." And she's like, "Thanks." You know,
And
you're like,
she's like, "This is the most bizarre author visit
right?
ever."
Yeah.
So I went to a
So
Hollywood sound studio to have a author visit with
so
Catherine Roy.
funny. Yeah, I felt like when they were there, my job was just to keep them focused and happy and entertained because they were really overwhelmed by all the people around and all the cameras, you
I
know,
imagine,
multiple
yeah.
people standing. So I was just like, okay, like let's go, and I'm just going to talk about sharks, and I just kept talking, and they'd be like, Catherine, we're not rolling right now. I'm like, it doesn't matter because like they need to stay
They're
focused. So,
children, that's right. Well, I
so
like
I kept going.
no, and I was gonna say with the software, and I don't use that software, and it doesn't matter. What I liked in the commercial was that in that 3D software that it showed layers to your shark. It showed
Yeah.
layers to the water, and I thought it was just a neat way to sort of dissect the work that I know you do. Even if you're working traditionally, I know that you're still making layers to do all of that. To see this software show how you can work with separate layers was cool. But
I think what's really neat about the software, and this is what I said in my original Skype interview, and it's what they ran with for the shoot, was that making those 3D models based on the shark or based on an African elephant, you can actually import them into, and by the way, I'm not being paid right now. I just think it's cool. You can import them into PowerPoint and have them use the morph transition between slides, and you can actually animate that shark going from, let's say you're looking at its, you know, left side to zooming in on its left eye and then turning it in space in the next slide so that you're looking at the right side of its body, or you're zooming in or out on one of its fins.
Oh,
And so
cool.
it's really cool tool for giving school presentations.
Will you
And
use
that's,
that, I assume?
I will now. I mean, I
Yeah.
wasn't allowed to have it in this last round of presentations because the commercial wasn't out yet, but absolutely, I'll be reworking my presentations to include it,
That's
partly
cool.
because the kids have seen it on TV, but also partly because I think it is a neat tool. The other thing that they didn't talk about that doesn't belong in the commercial, but is certainly helpful for me, is to be able to make a model and then turn it in space. Like, for example, the bathysphere is this circular object with a square base, and I need to be able to look at it from different angles when making the art. I can create that in this program and then take screenshots. So even though ultimately my books will continue to stay traditionally painted, I can use that in this other way. So,
It
I
helps
mean,
you
it
with the
was,
composition. It helps you,
yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
cool.
Yeah. So it's a planning tool for me, and it'll be a school presentation tool. I don't see myself making three-dimensional art as final illustrations, but what they wanted to focus on with the commercial was using the software to reach a new audience and using it to reach kids and teaching and education. And so I was 100% on board with that message. And I think that turned out really neat. Also, it was really funny being on set with all of these people who work in Hollywood who, you know, built the set, and they'd come up to me like, is this really what your studio looks like?
And no. I'd be like,
yeah.
You know we're in Hollywood, right?
like you realize that this is your job and you built this, right? Like, we all agree that this is fake, but it's really neat. I'd love to take it home with me. Would you like to ship it to me?
Yeah. Maybe even the compliment, though, that you fit so well in it.
Yeah,
that it's believable. And that's a neat thing. When I watched that commercial, to be honest, I didn't know that you didn't go to a school and just shoot a scene. It makes sense. I guess that shows my naivete toward Hollywood and how they make commercials and whatever. But they did a good job, I think, making it not feel staged. It really does feel like the Catherine Roy that I've met before, that we've talked about before, that likes being in front of kids and making art. So I think they painted you in a really good light. And I think the fact that you had the opportunity to just be yourself, and that's what they captured and put forward in the commercial, I think is really cool. It's a pretty cool piece of work.
I feel really good about it, and it makes me really appreciate how much goes into any small commercial, any movie. I mean, it's really changed the way I think about certain scenes now. You know, I mean, I was recently watching Rogue One, and there's that moment where she's...
I was literally going to say Star Wars. Oh, my God.
Really?
Well, she's like, melting. You mean down, like in The Last Jedi?
She's watching the hologram of her father as the building is coming down around her, right? And she's like breaking down, but she's got to go because she hasn't talked to her father in like 25 years or whatever. And now that I've been on that set and I've seen how much is involved, I am blown away that she could stare at what was probably just a little blue light with a guy, you know, a grip with a mic hanging over her and like 14 people off to the side and, you know, two hair and makeup people over there and, you know, somebody else like making snacks over there. And she's just surrounded by this chaos, has to just on cue have the correct emotional reaction. And she's probably got to do it 20 times in a row.
And she probably did it so many times. And then when we see the movie and we see Jin have that feeling and know again that is CGI work all around her.
Yeah.
Everything happening is not really there, but the storytelling that goes in is such a neat connection with art and with how much you say in your art. And also with acting, I feel like, gosh, if you want to bring it back to like any of our jobs, teaching or illustrating or whatever, where we all think we know what goes on when you're acting or when you're teaching or when you're whatever, but when you're there, when you experience, so even like in small part with a commercial, what these actors go through, just to know the amount that they have to bring to the table to sell it to us, to make us believe in the illustration, make us believe in the lesson being taught, make us believe in the movie. It's something. It's skill.
And it's a team effort too. I mean, you just see how hard everyone else is working on set too. Like, there's that person in front of the camera, but there's so much else going on all the time to figure all that out. And the chain of command that has to be present to make it all work is just extraordinary. Mm. You know, and even it's funny. Yeah. It's gave me a real appreciation for what has to go into something like that, or even a short commercial. But also thankful for the job that I do have. Like, it was a great world to visit, but I don't think I could function for that long in that intensive environment day after day after day. You know, I just think, it would burn me out really quickly. So I think that it's a really cool energy that happens with all these people making one thing. But I do love what I do, and I love the way that I get to teach through books, you know, so, fun experience. And I hope that, you know, they do really well with their campaign, and it's been really strange to see myself everywhere. But it was also just an extraordinary opportunity. So,
Well, I know that we've reached the end of our time, and I also know that you and I need to make sure we talk sooner than when we have a million billion things to talk about. Although, given the trajectory of your career, I'm sure I could talk to you in a week and there'd already be so many things to talk about.
I hope not. I need a little space to get some stuff done.
But listen, let's for the time we have now together, let's close by bringing you back into that classroom, back in front of children. Your book will be out, will be read by children, will be circulated, will be loved. Let me end with this. And first, of course, thank you. Of course, thank you for your time, for your dedication to this work, for your time spent with me talking and letting me be a fan and letting me be curious.
You're so welcome.
Endlessly fascinated, and I just love that you do what you do, and I mean that. But more importantly, I love the way that you get kids to react about books, which is why I'm going to bring you to this question. I'll see a library full of children, Catherine. Is there a message that I could please bring to them from you?
I've been thinking a lot about this, and I think for me, I would love to impart to them that anything that they want to get good at, they just need to put in the time. It's just practice. You know, I think that that's true if you want to play basketball. I think that's true if you want to play the violin. I think that's true if you want to make drawings. I think that's true if you want to be a writer. Like, if you're willing to get your butt in the chair or get out on the court or whatever it is and put in the time, you will get better at something. So go for it.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 400 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, and Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with books they'll love. Our theme music is composed by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I would love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate this podcast through Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that is a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Penny Thomas shares Nemosham and His Bus, her debut picture book. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.